retail? Isn't there something in there about a grandfathering of privileges for existing medical marijuana caregivers?
I'm not aware of a blanket grant of grandfathering. There are a couple of places where there are mentioned preferences or priorities in terms of licensing. Okay. But I don't think any of that skips the requirement of municipal approval. A current caregiver is exempt from municipal regulation, ordinances, zoning ordinances.
So they get preferences for applying to the state for a license, as according to the MLA. But they don't have any sort of leg up in terms of locating in one particular place or another throughout the state.
Well, I'd say even more, like, you know, the caregiver who cultivates on Sewell Street, you know, in Augusta, may have a, by the MLA, may have a preference for becoming a cultivator, but that's with regard to state licensure. They still don't get a free pass with regard to the location of their facility and municipal approval. Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
So if that's really the case, I guess I would side with the notion that if someone wants to enter the adult use market for cultivation and change the status of their license from, you know, medical use to adult use, then that's a whole new thing.
Right, exactly.
And that's an expansion of their privileges, and so they would then have to select a location that would be welcoming.
Sure. Any other questions on this comment? Nope. Okay. We're going to save those big bullet points for our further conversation a week from today. Business restrictions?
Okay. The first one is a limitation issue, so we'll pass. Okay. The second one is a limitation issue on reducing the number of blocks based on underuse. The third one is that the licensed cultivation facility, I just kept using facility here because I got so tired of writing licensed cultivation facility. So facility may sell and distribute only to licensed marijuana, other licensed retail marijuana licensees. So the cultivation facility would not be able to sell on the open market to consumers, would not be able to sell to, at this point, not be able to sell to the medical market. They would be only selling to other retail marijuana licensees. That's what that bullet means for your consideration. The next one is the facility could co-locate with a licensed retail marijuana store. That should be if both of them meet all state and municipal requirements. Third one is co-located licensed cultivation facility and licensed retail marijuana store. Co-location itself doesn't count against municipal limits on licensed retail marijuana stores. So if a municipality says they'll only have 4 stores in the municipality, if what is approved for that location is a cultivation facility and store, then it doesn't count as a store. Okay? So I guess what they're saying is it counts as a cultivation facility. We're counting it once. But that's your choice. The facility may provide samples to the testing facility for testing and research. A facility that provides a sample for testing must retain records of the sample the testing facility and the results. The facility must keep complete set of records open for inspection and examination by the state licensing authority during business hours. The facility may be required to furnish additional information and submit to an audit. This facility must be open for inspection and investigation during business hours and at other times of apparent activity, including any locked areas of the facility. One of the states prohibits consumption of retail marijuana and retail marijuana products on the premises of the cultivation facility. And then last one is, it's a variation on limitation, which is just that immature plants don't count, but that's a limitation issue, so we'll set it aside. So any of those you'd like to talk about?
Representative Corey. Representative Hotterville.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this a place that where we should be talking about sort of like cameras in facilities? I know that was a big discussion in Colorado with regard to sort of cameras on entrances and facility operations so that you could sort of see what was going on in cultivation areas and everything.
I don't know the answer to that, maybe.
So that it was regularly recorded. I'm not talking about anything where there would be a, you know, a live feed to the government. You know, I'm talking about, you know, video of what was happening. Do you know what I mean? On the cultivation floor and throughout the process. So, no, I'm not talking about that. But obviously something that can be accessed, you know, in the event that they imagine there could be some kind of activity that doesn't align with the law happening.
Yes, Jane.
Yeah, I mean, we can make a note to discuss security here. Security was mentioned in under number two, the third to the last bullet. Indoor and outdoor facilities must meet security requirements. So, both places.
Okay. Senator Cates.
Thank you. One of these bullets just doesn't, I don't understand the logic behind it. Maybe you can help me. A co-located licensed cultivation facility and licensed retail marijuana store together does not count against municipal limits on licensed retail marijuana stores. It just doesn't seem logical to me. If a town says we want five stores, that means we want five stories, not six, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what the theory is there?
I think it was just I don't know. It was from one of the states. I think it was an attempt to have a co-located facility counted in one category, not both categories. But it's certainly up to you.
Do others have comment on that? Representative Ackley?
Yeah, I think there is a provision in the Marijuana Legalization Act that allows for a farm stand or some sort of retail automatically with every cultivation license you get. It's a provision that allows for an extra retail site if there's an approved cultivation facility.
So why don't we get some clarification on that through the MLA or I sort of tend to agree. Like, I feel like but if you're talking about farm stands, that's a different vision than I had of what this reads to me. So,
retail.
Yeah, retail is retail. Anyone
this
else?
Is in the MLA.
Okay. Doesn't mean we're going to keep it, but it's an interesting conversation. Anyone else want to comment on that one or have thoughts? Representative Ackley.
I'm sure when Representative Hickman is in the room, he's going to have some thoughts.
Okay. Fair enough. The VLA is doing 20 public hearings and work sessions today, which is where Representative Hickman and Representative somebody else down there. I don't know.
Monahan.
Thank you. They let us know that. So, so it feels. I think. Personally, I could check the box about the third bullet. Facilities may sell and distribute only to licensed retail marijuana licensees. Does anyone have any conflict around that or thoughts about that? I'm trying to think of things we can eliminate talking about because we all agree about them. Yep, got a thumbs up. Or anybody want to talk about that anymore? No? Okay. The co-locate, as long as you meet the state and municipal requirements, seems fine. You just need to meet state and local. Any other thoughts about that specifically? The co-located with the that we've just been talking about clearly needs more discussion. Some of these other things, anybody, you know, the testing. They all seem very logical to me. We want to make sure people are available, make sure we track it. Any concerns at this moment? You can always revisit it, but just concerns, thoughts. Yes, Representative Corey.
Yeah, I spoke with somebody the other day. I believe he's in the room right now, but he had said that he'd be very willing to bring in an expert on seed to sale, sort of tracking software, so we can get a presentation on that at some point.
Senator Cates?
Say thank you, Representative. We're going to have a day, hopefully the next 2 or 3 weeks, devoted specifically to that, and we're already reaching out to experts, and so they want to contact us to talk about that whole area. Yep.
Thanks. Representative Marine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we talk about co-locating or growing in one place and selling in another, mm-hmm. do we need to be concerned about the transportation from A to B?
I'm concerned about that, so I think we do, yeah. Transportation, which I think we talk a little bit down here. Item 7, yeah. So, but yeah, definitely. All right.
Were you,
yes.
Madam Chair, were you trying to see if you had a consensus on facility may provide samples for testing, must keep records? Those are the two that are about testing. But it seemed to me you were asking if you had an agreement on those, but I didn't.
I think we had agreement on.
Okay.
We moved great. You have to obviously keep a complete set of records. I mean, a lot of this will be done specifically in rulemaking, I assume, but I think we want to make sure that it happens. Submit to an audit. I mean, it seems logical. Representative Ackley.
One observation on the testing issue is perhaps we want to allow facilities to allow access for testing. If we're going to allow, if we're going to require samples to be collected by the independent third-party lab, then we might want to specifically allow the cultivation facilities to grant access to those licensed labs.
Okay. Representative Corey?
Yeah, I'd like to echo that for sure. I know that, you know, when we went and visited the dispensary, that really only employees were allowed to be in there, and from the law, legislators were allowed to be in there. But, you know, you weren't even allowed, I guess, within the facility if you weren't even a main resident that worked there, and they all had to have a special card to work within these facilities. So I would say that we're probably going to have to make that consideration, that anybody that's, you know, partially a third-party tester that needs to go in and test, we're probably going to have to create.
Sounds like it should be cross-referenced in both places.
Okay. Did you make the decision that the testing is going to be done, the sampling is going to be done by a...
We did not make that decision.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But let's just keep that in mind, that depending on how that... Senator Cates?
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody who might be listening in, or here rather, that all these things we're saying, we're all comfortable with it. We want to hear from other folks. These are not any decisions that are locked in. We want to hear from all of you on all of these issues.
All the time. Any other bullet points here that people have thoughts or concerns about?
So are you in consensus on information, audits, inspections? Mm-hmm. Yes? Okay.
Until we hear otherwise, yep. Open for inspection. So prohibit the consumption of retail marijuana and retail marijuana products on the premise of cultivation facilities.
Right.
That sounds like a big policy thing to me. Okay, any thoughts about that in the group or Representative Bickford?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it goes without saying it would be like a bar not allowing its employees to consume alcoholic beverages on site. I would think it would be identical. Plus, you're smoking in a public place or in a business, which is illegal right now anyway. So,
if it's smoking, yeah. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts on that? Oh, lost my wingman here. No? Okay, interesting.
That's a yes? At this point? At this point, yes.
Obviously, we'll revisit all of these. Yeah. Tracking, I think we're going to talk about in a whole day. Transportation, obviously, is important, and security around that.
On transportation, there are a number of different ways that states have handled this, and the MLA currently allows a licensee to transport to other licensees. Some states license a separate transportation business, and that person does the transportation. I would say most commonly that I've seen, whoever's transporting maintains very careful records about batch numbers or, the bill of lading or whatever is going on. So I just want to bring to your attention that currently the MLA doesn't have a separate license for transportation because they allow any licensee to transport to any other licensee.
Thoughts about that? Because we had talked about people who might want to just solely be in the transportation business and not be part of any other. Senator Cates.
Yeah, I don't have any thoughts about it, but maybe this is also a subject for separate, not necessarily a full day, but a separate transportation in general.
Yeah. And I suppose you could do a hybrid, which is you could allow licensees to transfer to other licensees, and you could license transporters in case somebody who's a licensee doesn't want to do their own transportation.
Representative Ackley?
I'm in agreement with that thought, as long as we're, insisting on some sort of chain of custody documentation. Either way.
Yep. Great. Canopy is another one of those.
That's the limitation.
Big elephant
question
in the room right now. So okay.
Right.
Good. Well, I think we've gone through the whole document now, which is great. If our committee doesn't have any further comment or question, I'd welcome hearing from the people in the room, and happy to have that happen at their pleasure. Who would like to go first, if anyone?
Senator Cates, Representative First Committee. My name is Hannah King. This isn't my first time presenting to you, but just as a reminder, I'm an attorney with Drum & Woodsum. I'm an advisory board member of Maine Professionals for Regulating Marijuana, and I just wanted to give you a little bit of background that's important to what I'm about to talk about. I have let committee members know that one of the things I'm doing as an attorney for Drum & Woodsum is representing tribal clients across the country. These are sophisticated tribes with large gaming operations that are exploring entering into the industry, including doing business feasibility studies and market demand predictions. I'm also a member of ArcView, which is a national angel investment group for the cannabis industry out of Berkeley, and I was recently selected to be one of their 15-member selection committee. So I vet potential cannabis businesses and entrepreneurs to forward on to other qualified investor members for consideration around investment. And the reason that I just wanted to talk about those is that I wanted to talk quickly about MPRM's recommendations around cap and canopy, and it's going to be quick, but it comes from an investment perspective. Is there going to be public comment on Friday? Because I can wait.
There will be, absolutely.
Okay.
Is that the only thing you wanted to comment on? I can appreciate that you're here because we had published this as part of what we were going to talk about. So, yeah,
and I'm happy,
Senator,
to come back.
Yeah, we kind of threw you a curveball by saying we were going to delay discussion of that. If you're not going to be here for that meeting, then
A week from today.
I can be here a week from today.
And if you wouldn't mind deferring to then.
And I think, so I really appreciate your flexibility with that, but I also think that it's helpful for us to contain conversation and topic so that we all have the same information and not random.
No, absolutely, and I understand that it wasn't.
No,
it was
out. It's
I'm
us.
Following the schedule, and then it wasn't clear if there was going to be open to public comment on Friday. So I'll return next Friday, and we'll provide input from MPRM on those two issues.
Appreciate your flexibility.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Can I ask Hannah and other people? I'm going to be collecting technical, professional information on limits, and so if anybody has any articles, research they want to provide to me, I'd welcome getting that.
Yeah, I can do that. And also, if you're interested, I mean, we work with a number of different consulting organizations out of Colorado and California who do some of these feasibility analyses and market demand studies, and I'm happy to provide you with their information as well.
Thank you. That'd be great.
Yes. Also, for the public comment next week, I mean, we'd be happy to hear from any professionals who Not so much on what a limit would be if we had one, but I think we're all concerned about, on this subject, about what's the best route to go to discourage diversion into the illegal market. So if there are experts that people have on that subject, generally we'd love to hear from them. Not that it ought to be, if we have a limit, it ought to be 800,000, or that it should be number of plants, it ought to be production of a product or anything else, but just from an economics perspective, the best way to go on limiting diversion.
Absolutely. And Jane, I can talk to you afterwards if you'd like.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your flexibility.
Thank you all.
Are there others who have comment on the specific things we talked about today? Welcome.
Thank you. Senator Cates, Representative Pierce, and distinguished members of the Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation. My name is Tim Smale. I'm co-founder of Remedy Compassion Center, one of the 8 licensed medical cannabis dispensaries located in Auburn, Maine. I also serve as president of the Maine Association of Dispensary Operators here in Maine. But it's my role as chair of the American Herbal Products Association Cannabis Committee, or APA, that I'd like to address today. I do have 25 copies or 30 copies to distribute what I'm going to talk about. It'll be short and sweet, and I would like to make 3 short comments on what we did talk about today. I'm sorry that I missed the earlier meeting this week, so some of these things that I'm passing out address what we talked about earlier this week and also today. Many of the issues of this committee and eventually rulemaking bodies contend with and have actually been addressed already by the medical cannabis industry. And in fact, standards have been created from best practices from within this industry to help guide regulators in creating regulations and laws, to guide legislators as well. APA's Cannabis Committee exists to address issues related to the safe use and responsible commerce of legally marketed products derived from cannabis species. APA's Cannabis Committee has developed recommendations for regulators in 5 specific areas. All of our free to use and found on APA's website. These are in use by about 25 medical cannabis states today. These standards have been in place for about 2 or 3 years and have been in development for over 5 years, representing comments and input from professionals in the cannabis industry from all over the nation, in fact, internationally. I've listed the 5 different standards that are out there, and these are websites that you can go to that actually give you copies of the standards. The next 2 pages are simply the table of contents on both sides. The one is the table of contents of issues that we talked about previously this week, cannabis manufacturing It should say packaging. I'm sorry, that's a typo, but I copied and pasted from their website. And labeling holding operations. And you can see by looking through the table of contents, these are issues that probably will fit great in rulemaking, perhaps may be some things for you to contend with as well. But definitely at the point of regulation, this is where the rubber meets the road. These are definitely best practices developed from within industry that really all should follow. And the other page is simply the cannabis cultivation and processing operations, of which we've been talking about today. And these are not necessarily how to grow cannabis or which plants to choose. These are electrical inspections. These are plumbing inspections. These are safety inspections. These are all things that best practices of businesses that are in cultivation, manufacturing, processing, distribute, and lab operations of cannabis should follow. So those are free to use, and I just wanted to make that as a resource to the committee, and I'll serve as a resource, of course, on those items, and we'll continue to represent the association and Remedy Compassion Center in future meetings. Any questions on that before I make three quick comments?
Senator Cates?
Thank you. Thank you for this.
And my pleasure.
I'm sure it'll be really helpful. Could you email this to our staff if they can re-email it to us so we could open those links if we wanted to?
Yes, I'll do that.
Thanks very much.
You can provide an email address. Helpful?
Sure.
Thank you. Second, I'd like to make specific comments. Number one on location. That would be number two on the document. We talked about maximum amount of marijuana on the presence on the premises. I would say that, for example, today the medical marijuana laws for the cultivation facilities limit us to one production facility. We can't have another in backup. And we really can't buy from another source because those other sources are having their own supply to keep up with. So let's assume that there's a problem with production and that you need to restart production. I'm basically talking about 9 months minimum, and really 12 months is a good time frame, I think, to have an adequate supply of inventory. In other words, what are your sales going to be for that 12-month period? And then have that kind of supply in sort of a work-in process. It doesn't have to be in packaged inventory, ready to go, but it can be a work-in process. And here's how I come up with 9 months. It takes about two months to secure a facility, if you're good. It took me 9 months to secure mine initially, but these days maybe two. Another month to build, and that's really aggressive. Another month to clone, another month to veg, another 2 months to flower, another month to harvest. That's 9 months. 9 months minimum to restart your production. So it's really kind of difficult, especially in the onset, to buy product from other sources. So I would encourage a 9 to 12-month supply to be able to have on the premises. And that, again, can be in work in process, doesn't have to be in finished inventory. Secondly, I turn your attention to business restrictions. But in the middle, we talked about co-located cultivation facilities could also serve as retail stores. I'm not sure that would be in the best interest of those municipalities that say in a tiny town of 5,000 people, we're going to have two retail stores, or maybe there's going to be five more cultivation facilities. I don't know. All of a sudden, they've got more stores, more retail stores than they had bargained for. I think that's a consideration. And finally, on the prohibition of consumption of retail marijuana and products on the premises of the cultivation facility, I would just make an asterisk there that for medical cannabis users, it might be permissible because a lot of those folks are employed in the industry to be able to use their medical cannabis products. And again, that might be part of another medical cannabis set of rules and regulations. But that just would be a caveat, I would say, on that particular point. That's all the points I'd like to make today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Appreciate the information.
Thank you.
Welcome. Anyone else like to join us? Come make comment? Mr. McCarricker, how are you, McCarrier?
Very well, thank you, Ms. Chairwoman. Trying to spice it up, not going last.
Yeah. Or maybe.
We got my hopes up that we were almost done.
Thank you. My name is Paul T. McCarrier. I'm with Legalize Maine. Thanks for taking the time to hear public comment today. One document that I'm handing out to probably consider for next Friday's discussion talks about our estimate for what consumer demand would be in Maine. And we can either talk about that now or talk about it later, but it's just the idea of what we suspect the domestic consumption would be and what we suspect the tourist consumption could be. And also some information, there's a link on there concerning the 2014 report from Colorado. So it's their first year that they had adult use sales. The other thing I'm just having to pass around, this may be a little late, but this is some packaging from Washington. And so this is something that will actually give you an idea of how things are packaged in Washington. One edible and then also some flour. I only have so many of those, and so I hope everyone could just pass it around to share. You know, following this discussion today, when we're talking about central, you know, the electrical usage, we think that's very important to consider, especially because this is a heavy, uses a lot of, it's a heavy use industry for electricity. And from my discussions with people who are involved with CMP is that CMP is already requiring an electrical plan if you are planning to have a medical marijuana facility for non-personal grow. So they really want that to be developed out. It has been an issue with the blowing of transformers and with putting strain on the grid. So I thank you for taking the time to consider that as a part of this larger discussion. When we're, I believe at the beginning, while I was listening in, Chairman Cates brought up the idea of how does a municipality limit the number of plants for personal grow, or like the personal grow per site? And I know that in Colorado they've been developing municipal ordinances. I'm not as familiar with how their state and local governments interact, but I know that they're setting a plant limit for those. I think Colorado Springs set it 12 plants per household. So that's a way that maybe the municipality could look at it, or possibly the state could, you know, look at setting some sort of number for that, as long as it wouldn't discourage people from being able to cultivate their own. As a side, I think there is an opportunity for like an ancillary business, especially for a lot of unused farmland, for people to be able to cultivate their own. And it also offers an opportunity for an educational purpose where people can teach others how to cultivate their own cannabis, whether for adult use or for medical therapy. When we're talking about the idea of prohibiting consumption of retail marijuana products on the premises of cultivation facility, if we're going to compare this to a beer or wine industry, you know, from my discussions with different brewers, is before the brewers will necessarily bottle something or put it into kegs, is that they definitely want to taste it to make sure that that quality's there. So that's something that I think should be considered if you're looking at possibly prohibiting any sort of consumption of cannabis on the facility where it's produced. When we're talking about the idea of allowing co-location of retail stores and cultivation facilities, again, to make the beer comparison, I believe that's very similar to tasting rooms, or allowing the production facility or the brewery to be able to sell growlers off their premises, with the concern that the municipality may not want something like that. That's still something that the municipality can regulate if it's coming down to deciding whether that's an appropriate zone to be able to having any retail sales happening, or whether they want to allow any sort of retail sales happening at all within their town. We're very strong believers in local control when it comes down to the MLA, and we hope that the committee continues along with that spirit. And finally, when we're talking about the idea of keeping a supply on premises, we think it's very important that they're able to keep an adequate supply on premises. Is also, when we're talking about market forces, is that if someone is not vertically integrated or doesn't have their own retail store, they may want to keep a certain amount of inventory on premise as waiting for the price to rise up again. Because what we saw last year is that the wholesale price of cannabis in Colorado had really bottomed out, I think, to around like $1,400 a pound. And what we're seeing thus far this first quarter is that that's risen another 20%. So I think it's back to around $1,600 a pound wholesale. So that could be an idea of why someone would want to keep an inventory on premises as a way to get a better price for their product. And finally, this estimate for consumption, when we're talking about what it's actually looking for, this is based off of it's on the second page, a quarter pound per square foot using an indoor lighting. And again, this projection was made 2 years ago when we initially wrote this initiative. So the idea is that that might have changed. But even then, if we're talking about the idea of 800,000 square feet, if you're considering that some of the...
Can I just interrupt you? I think the information on what you think the demand is, that's fine. We don't want to get into translating it into canopy limits or plant limits.
Great.
Because we just want to reserve that for another time.
Yes, sir. And so again, but it would just—I hope this provides like a good like a good data point for you when you're considering what the consumption will be in the state. You know, we had 33.8 million tourists here last year, and when Colorado legalized cannabis, they did see, I think, a 5 or 6% bump in tourism. That doesn't necessarily correlate to the legalized use of cannabis, but anecdotally, from what I heard, a lot of people decided to go to Colorado because they could legally access cannabis. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
Senator Cates.
Do you know, Paul, or could you expand a little bit? It seemed to me like a no-brainer that people at cultivation facilities should not be able to use marijuana in any form, but you've raised an interesting point about sort of internal quality control, if you will, from a tasting perspective. Do you know how other states deal with that issue?
I'm not familiar how other states deal with that issue, but that's something I'm going to definitely look up before Tuesday.
Yeah.
Great. Senator, Representative Corey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we talk about storing product on site and everything else, what is the shelf life of cannabis? Like, I understand the edibles probably have a different shelf life than the flower itself, but how long can you store it in?
A lot of it depends on the environment that it's being stored in. So if, you know, it's not being exposed to any light and you have a constant temperature and humidity, I think, you know, generally around, like, you know, 62% and about, you know, 60 degrees, it'll generally last, you know, up for a couple years. So it can last quite a while if it's in, like, a sealed jar, sealed container.
Is that harvested, processed?
That's harvested, processed.
Any other questions? Great. Thank you so much.
Wanted to add is that when we're looking at this consumption, too, just as something to keep in mind, is that if this committee's talking about the idea of the tax rate, when you're considering that discussions of tax rate, I hope we consider the fact that if the tax rate raises is too high, people will already go to the existing illicit market. That was the intention behind setting at 10%, which I've heard from many people that they see that as too low. But again, we had the concept that we're trying to bring a illicit market totally out into the light, and we wanted to make sure that people, that human nature would say that someone would be willing to pay 10% more for a legal product as opposed to getting it illicitly, kind of the path of least resistance.
So. We look forward to that tax conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Since everyone's spending all the money that we're going to raise here. So. Every group is spending the money. So, any other questions or thoughts? No? Welcome.
Greetings, committee. My name's Dr. Trevor Bozeman. I spoke once before. I have a PhD in medicinal chemistry. I'm also a consultant for the state of Ohio for their medical program, and we'll be doing the review of their cultivation and processing applications this summer. I just kind of wanted to hopefully come up and bury the plant count versus canopy limit.
We're going to be talking about that on a week from Friday. We've already asked someone, are you able to come?
Yeah, I thought that was just recently discussed, and that was the elephant in the room.
Which is why we're having a full day devoted to it, where we can talk about that in more detail. So,
Okay, I can wait on that.
I'm sorry. I appreciate your flexibility, and I know we sort of changed the a little bit of our conversation around it.
Sure. I guess I'll just keep it brief to one general comment, kind of on the same lines of what I mentioned before. I hear a lot about Colorado and what other states did and what Colorado did especially. I just want to point out that for every four or five things that they got right, they got one wrong. And you should learn to do what they, you know, failed to do as much as, you know, what they did get correctly. There's other very complicated issues coming up. I'm not going to mention them to get into them. I just don't want to see, you know, following one state kind of too closely and then, you know, end up going right over the edge with them. I can certainly comment to a lot of mistakes made in other states, and I just want to see my home state get it right. I honestly have no vested interest other than, you know, hopefully after, you know, a crusade of legalization across the U.S., I can come back here and have my six plants and retire. But, you know, that's...
So, do you have a question, Senator?
Thank you for coming. Do you have any thoughts on what we did discuss this morning, Doctor?
I'm not very organized. I mean, as far as the co-op for rec plants, part of the reason they do plant count for you know, the 6-plant limit or whatever is for law enforcement. It's very easy to come in and, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, you got one too many, whereas you can't go in and measure, you know, canopy size. People have grows in very strange areas or, you know, in separate rooms and stuff like that. But as far as having people do like a co-op, it would be hard for enforcement, I think. But that's up to you guys. I don't think that's like a very big issue. I think the biggest thing is having an operational program, you know, by the deadline, and that's the biggest deterrent you can have for people going, you know, to the illicit market. I think we're scheduled for January 2018. I think it's especially important to have it for the tourist season in June of 2018. I think there'll be a lot of revenue as a result.
Can you just share, so you're reviewing the Ohio cultivation licensing?
Right, so Ohio is going to do 12 provisional level one licenses, which are 25,000 square feet with the possibility of going up to 50,000 square feet. They're also going to license 12 provisional cultivators for a level two, which is going to be 3,000 square feet up to a possibility of 6,000 square feet. Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm sorry, Ohio... Yeah. They're just medical, right?
Or yeah, they passed HB 523.
Okay, so only for medical.
Yes, just for medical.
Thank you. Any other questions of the good doctor? Okay. Representative Ackley.
Could you help us understand the implications of growers locating in the same building? Does that pose a potential operational problem for growers?
So, right, you mentioned the mite issue. Of course, the insects or any plant disease, there are plant viruses that are transmissible that would be a problem. I also grew. I have grow experience, including 2 years in California. The first thing that came to mind is if somebody had, you know, something that they were doing an experiment on, a lot of the time you get hermaphrodites or pollen, and once, you know, pollen can travel... I've heard estimates anywhere from 2 to 8 miles, and that's the biggest thing. Once you have the flower pollinated, it goes to seed, and unless you're a seed, you know, vendor, that doesn't help you at all. Mm-hmm. So coming from a grower standpoint, I would have a problem, you know, trying to initiate and go into a building or wanting to do that with a bunch of other growers around. I can see the draw having everything in one spot. Maybe, you know, it's a little convenience. But as far as the 100 people on Facebook, the feasibility of that, I think, would be in the capital needed to start up, you know, 600 plants. It might be easy for a home grower to throw down a couple $1,000s on a few lights, but, you know, you're trying to talk about a collective with 600 plants and, you know, 50 lights, 60 lights, then you're getting into something, you know, pretty huge.
Thank you.
Sure.
Representative, follow-up.
Is that something we need to make a law against, or, you know, is that just something that is the market's going to take care of when people fail because they happen to be part of a collective of six other grow facilities and all six go belly up? Is that, you know, going to solve its own problem?
It could. I'll be honest. The first time I actually heard about the prevalence of that happening in Colorado was in one of these meetings, so I'm not very familiar with the kind of combined growing in one building or how attractive it is to individual growers.
Great. Jane?
Can I just ask, there was a question about the 20-foot requirement. Outdoor grow sites must be physically separated by 20 feet. And they may not share a common wall or fence. Do you know from science what the reason, if there's a reason from science for doing that?
I couldn't say. I mean, 20 feet is definitely close enough to transmit pollen, other plant bacteria, viruses, mites, other bugs, you know, or even have, you know, a pollinating insect drop on one crop, go to another crop, go to, you know, especially if you're talking about outdoors in that case.
Okay, thank
you. So I'm not sure.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Welcome, Mr. Peterson. How are you?
Very good. I can't think of any place I'd rather be than Friday mornings with you guys.
So nice of you to say.
Good morning, Representative Peirce, Chairman Representative Peirce, Chairman Cates, rest of the board.
I'm a little confused about what you'd want comment on, but
I think the things that we talked about today would be great if you could.
Maybe just to give you some numbers, if you stuck with an 800,000 square foot canopy.
Oh, that's not a, we weren't talking about canopy today. We're going to talk about that next week in some more detail.
Well, I was just going to say that based on the large and small licenses, you'd have 16 large licenses and 106
so next
small
week
licenses.
I think next week would be a great time to have the conversation around the tiering and the canopy size. So are there things specifically around...
Well,
I'm sorry, you forgot to introduce yourself, Michael.
I'm Glenn Peterson, Poland, Maine. Co-op growing or growing in multiple cultivation sites would never appeal to me. I agree with Dr. Bozeman. Your chain is only as strong as its weakest link, and if someone were to not be able to take care of their plants, you could... I don't even like to go into hydro shops, that scares me. Good clean practices, especially if you have no pesticides available, is safe sex. You just have to have very high standards and not let anyone else in your room and practice very clean practices. Showering, beard, covers, hair covers, gloves, dedicated shoes, showers, air scrubbers. The 20-foot gap between... cultivation sites outside, I imagine, would be to segregate them if it were either individual adult user growers or outdoor small commercial growers that would delineate their space, and it would make it harder to do a cooperative effort if you were completely enclosed and that's the only thing I can think of, because it doesn't prevent the pollen, it doesn't prevent the spread of mites or anything like that. I got lots of comments, but I couldn't keep up with your schedule on where. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, I guess.
Representative Ackley.
So two questions. Did I hear you right in saying that this 20-foot rule from some other state is probably related to just delineating the way that they measure the canopy size so that the regulators have some method of measuring what the canopy size is for each individual cultivator?
It seems to be the only logical way, because a small license of 3,000 square foot is 60 by 50, and if it was a large one, 30,000 square foot, 3/4 acre, and so it just to physically block off.
So Representative Ackley's brought up a good question, and maybe we want to make that on our canopy discussion, and maybe this is related to that. Maybe that's where this comes from. So we can go from there. Do you have a question about something, Dave? Representative Ackley?
One other question. You mentioned the good work practices of keeping your grow area clean, and I recall that we had some comment the other day. Someone had some concerns about laboratory sampling, and that might, if we were going to institute rules that say that samples need to be collected by independent third-party folks, that might actually introduce some contamination into a great grow area. So my question for you today is it possible with good regulated work practices for those folks who are collecting samples, i.e. use of hairnet, maybe putting on one of those Tyvek suits and booties and this, that, and the other thing, using gloves, yada, 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 could, if we were to... through rulemaking, create a process for collecting samples, would that be protective enough for someone who is cultivating to know that their crop is safe from contamination?
Well, I don't think that we would be able to create a program where you would have the sampling done in the room. It would be a issue of scheduling. Sometimes you say this is an 8-week plant, but it comes in 6.5 weeks. and it's time to bring it down. I think you would have to do it by the lots collected after they are dried, so that those that 100 pounds over there is what they need to take samples of. You'd have to create some sort of a large table for them to be able to get access to the, whether it's 5-pound lots or 10-pound lots, so that they can go in and sample individually. If you had, for example, 5-pound lots, 100-pound yield, that would be 20 different bags that they'd have to sample. Dr. Hudela was advocating was that you do a sample of each of those bags, homogenize it, because it's systemic for heavy metals and pesticides, you would be able to determine that that room was free of those problems, and then you would just go at it, individual samples for mold, individual samples for cannabinoids, based on strain that were grown in that room. But I actually, thinking about it, because I've been doing a lot of thinking about it, I don't think that it is feasible to go in and collect live samples or grown in while still growing. The problem is that you have to now dry it properly, get it to a consistent moisture content, which the cultivator should do beforehand, and then the samples are collected.
Mr. Peterson, sounds like there's a lot of detail around how we're going to collect sampling, and so I'm not sure it completely answered your question, but do you want to do a quick follow-up,
just a yes or no. If I'm understanding you properly, your answer is yes, there is a method for being protective of the contamination risk for a cultivator's crop.
Yes, there is.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Peterson? Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Look forward to your comments next week. Mr. Walker, welcome.
Senator Cates, Representative Peirce, members of the Marijuana Legalization Implementation Committee. My name is Dan Walker. I'm with Pretty Flaherty here in Augusta, and I represent the Wellness Connection. I also had some comments around the limits, and it's kind of interspersed with what I put together, but I'm just going to make some general statements that came up as I was listening and other things that we've been thinking about. Again, I just want to keep reminding the committee that the ultimate job of the committee is to protect the health and welfare of the public, while just a general statement about legislature while collecting revenue for the state. That's the general obligation of the legislature. And in doing so, to work with so then creating a rational, predictable, robust regulatory structure that's going to work with clear boundaries. And again, I say this sometimes when I say this, I'm talking about the system that we're still in and potentially, trying to work with, which is the medical program, which there are not clear boundaries. So we ask you to make sure as you're doing this to create clear boundaries and make it predictable. And then choose participants who have complied with the law and are going, and then you can predict will comply. So as part of the general general theory of and the thread that puts this all together. And you have, incredible resources within the state already, and they're before you quite a lot these days. So use what is already working within the state, what is already compliant when you go forward, and not try to make this overly complicated. Just use what you have. You know that there are compliant folks in the state of Maine. Utilize them as you go forward. And as you've seen, folks are using best practices already, trying to anticipate what you're going to do, and so utilize that. Um, And another point is just again that I've been bringing up is the timing of this all, and you know as this process extends, the illegal and gray market keeps expanding. We hear about more stores every day that are opening and without any of what you are putting together. So the sooner we can put things together, the sooner that that we'll be able to get a program that works for everyone and works for each program. We've been reading about Nevada, right? Nevada also passed they legalized adult use marijuana in November as well, and they've decided to allow for an early start beginning July 1st. So their applications are going to be available May 15th, and they need to be they're due on May 31st with the idea that they'll start up July 1, and the idea is they're going to use, again, what's working within their system already, use the folks in the medical program out there. Just an idea, but they're, and that will only last 6 months out there, and then they're going to, then they'll hopefully, you know, their goal is to be ready, like, it's about the same timing here, be ready, and then move into the regular program. But again, the idea is that they're trying to get in front of this as it's kind of blowing up around them. I also wanted to raise the issue around yesterday. Congress passed its continuing resolution. It looks like the president will sign it. And there's language in there that's extending the Rohrbach amendment that's been in place over the last couple continuing resolutions. And that came out of the Department of Justice memos. And the language is that the Department of Justice cannot prevent, quote, prevent any of the medical marijuana, well, says cannot prevent any of them, but the cannot prevent any of the medical marijuana states from implementing their own laws that authorize the use, distribution, possession, or cultivation of medical marijuana. So that Congress has acted on that. And what's interesting is if you look at, and I include on the last page here, they list out the states. There's 44 states there, plus the District of Columbia, Guam, and Puerto Rico. That's a lot. I think, you know.
So, go ahead.
Okay, and so the point is that I guess this goes to the limit. But the point is that be mindful of not overbuilding on the adult use side because this doesn't protect the state's adult. This protects the medical side, but not necessarily the adult use side.
So appreciate you bringing that information forward. You know we're going to talk about limits next Friday. Is there something specific that we've talked about today that you would like to?
Yeah.
Great.
Couple points.
Just because I've required that of everyone else.
Right, and so. That it happened yesterday.
Yeah, I appreciate the information. So
a couple things. I think, again, another thread that's going through what you talked about today was all these issues that potentially could circumvent everything you're going on. So avoid ways, as you're putting this together, that may circumvent the adult use market. And that, and I think part of that is differentiating between the medical market and some market in some specific way. For example, the discussion around labs. So LD 726 was passed last year. It talks about it gives folks access into the labs, so a lot of this stuff is already it's already done. It's already been going, and I think as you take the next step in the labs, and as you connect the various agencies as they work on it, they can harmonize their thinking around this. So, and I think as Tim pointed out, there are there's a lot of work that's being done in the and what I'm getting at is that just bring these together so folks out there aren't operating under two different sets, and it'll help law enforcement, it'll help the state. And then my last point, which leads from that, is that, again, this idea about the six facilities per parcel and whether or not this is okay and whether or not that pollen is going to transfer. I mean, it is the practice in the medical community on the caregiver side to have these sites. So it's happening right now. So again, if you're going to prohibit it one side for a certain set of reasons, just make it consistent across the board. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Representative Bloom.
Hi.
Hi.
On your last point, I'm having trouble understanding. When you say it's the practice of the medical community, what did you mean?
Well, I didn't mean it's a practice. You know, we heard from a gentleman, I think from Scarborough, who said he had a 250,000-square-foot warehouse that he's broken up into parcels. So it's not the practice, but it's a practice.
And those parcels are owned by one person.
But yeah. Each person has their space within it.
Okay. Right now, what do the regulations allow him to do? Just have six, or is there?
No, it's open. Right now, there are no regulations. It says, okay. The only thing it says is that it can't be a collective. And a collective would mean that the people within that location are working together.
Okay.
So as long as they're not working together.
I see.
They can do that.
So they're separate, and they're totally separate by no cross-contamination can occur, that kind of thing.
I haven't been in one of them, but okay. I think you probably get a lot of information here on how those work. But that's one of the business models.
Any other questions? Oh.
You said you approve of that business model.
I don't say I approve it or disapprove of it. I'm just saying make it consistent.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Representative Corey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So here's the deal. So I'm looking in here, and I'm looking at sort of this timing thing and early entry, and, you know, this is what you've been pushing, and this has been a part of your testimony today. There hasn't even been a lot of anecdotal evidence, to be honest with you, outside of you coming to me and saying, hey, there's a huge thriving black market right now that's growing and sort of everything else, and we have to, you know, seriously consider this as happening. You know, I saw an article in the newspaper that said about the guy that was, you know, doing, quote, donations, you know, but outside of that, I haven't seen big articles, big exposés, do you know what I mean, sort of on, you know, said black market. We've got 6 weeks left in this legislative session, and unless somebody comes with some kind of evidence, and, you know, that can be some anecdotal evidence, but there has to be something sort of overwhelming there, do you know what I mean, for us to have a compelling case even to start to consider this. And, you know, if this has been happening for months and months and months, why haven't we seen this? Why haven't we seen the compelling case? So I don't know if that's a question, but, you know, we're going to need this.
I just think I'll just respond very quickly. I think we've reached a level in our society, say, circa 1939, 1940, right? We're coming out of the speakeasy world, and it's out there, and we're moving out of it, and we're trying to do it in a way. And all I'm saying is that we need to do it in a way that's consistent, and the slower we go as we're putting it together, the more that it'll happen just on its own, which is the way it's happening. There's storefronts, so, and I'm not saying, I'd say it's more gray than anything, and just if you want to have control over what's happening, if you want to have some kind of shape, if you want to shape this industry, then all I'm saying is just shape it, and don't be laissez-faire, which is the way it's been.
Thank you. It's okay. Friday will be our conversation. Senator Cates and then Representative Ackley.
Thank you. I've got a couple questions there. First of all, on that last point, and I share your frustration, I think it's, I don't know why enforcement isn't out there cracking down on this, but I'm sure there are reasons for that. But even if we created a system tomorrow where we've got legal stores, why is the incentive for people to set up the illegal stores going to go away?
Well, I think because there'll be an opening, there'll be an opportunity for folks to come in. And I think people, you know, I think people would rather do things in the light. I think people would rather be legal and rather be not have any. I think that's why we've seen bill after bill through the medical program, through the adult, to try to get, and I think that the most biggest issue is just people are looking for predictability. I mean, you hear all the ways around the five patient issue. I think people just want predictability around it.
Right.
I mean, it's been more of acquiescence that people have gone one way or another. But I think all anybody wants is Like, right. what are the rules? And right. we will follow the rules.
You've made a really good argument for consistency of the rules between the two programs, and I get that. But do you have any thoughts about the merits of kind of limiting the ability of cooperative, and I don't mean that in a business sense necessarily, but multiple grows, multiple licenses being in a single large facility in terms of, not from a perspective of contamination, but from the perspective of ability to regulate?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, they'll all be in one place, you know, easy to regulate. On the other, I mean, if you can think of a way that folks are going to utilize that, then they will. I think we didn't draft the initiative, and so the six, I'm not exactly sure where that came from, other than the fact that I think they were trying to spread things out and not, you know, with the idea that folks could, if they all group together, then the implication is that they're somehow working together and somehow maybe under some co-ownership or something, and they're trying to spread the wealth.
Well, that's right, and that's my concern. I'm not sure it's a legitimate concern or not. As you see, you know, you walk in and you see a big, I haven't done this, but you walk in and you see a 200,000 square foot warehouse with 50 growers. And the message is nothing to see here. There's 50 separate growers and the landlord is charging fair market rent. And this is completely consistent with the intent of the law. And there's part of me that just, I guess, a little skeptical and says maybe that's not what's going on here. And we want to make sure that this isn't in some sense a single business. And I think
there's two issues there. And I think Representative Bickford raised it before. There's the you know, on the retail side question about keeping people together. And then there's on the personal use side. You know, you want to have people to be able to have, much like they have community gardens. Because if people live in the city, they want to be able to have a place. So that's fine. But, you know, then you just want to avoid the co-ops that are just, I think there was a unanimous vote in Colorado recently to ban these massive places where everyone could just, okay, I'm going to give my personal grow to this big, larger grow. So I think there's ways to monitor it, too. And I think you got to differentiate between the two.
Representative Ackley? I'm sorry, were you finished?
Yeah. Thank you. I'm in agreement that prohibition didn't really work in 1928, and it doesn't work today. I'm still struggling with how it is that allowing some market participants to enter early is a solution to the Wild West that we're in. And I think... I do think that at some point, Mr. Chair, that we consider talking about law enforcement strategies as part of the scope of what we look at in this committee, because along with our discussion on limiting the capacity of cultivation, we should be thinking about exactly the sticks that we're going to use to persuade the illicit market to come into the light of day.
Any other comments for Mr. Walker? Or questions, excuse me. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
See you Tuesday, if not before. Hello.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Not too bad.
It's not afternoon yet.
Good morning. My name is Tom Morris. I'm a cannabis consultant and president of the Maine Commercial Growers Association. Today I just kind of wanted, I was listening on the way up to the beginning of the discussion. I just was hoping for a little clarity regarding a couple points. The first one with the application requirements, with the common ownership, where a potential licensee could hold three licenses. Does that mean that they could hold potentially 90,000 square feet, so three separate 30,000 square feet licenses, or does that just mean that they could hold three separate facilities under that 130,000 square feet? I just wanted to see what the intent of that point was.
And that's a great question that I can't answer. Does anyone have? I think it's, according to Jane, do you have any comment?
I think it was
that?
Three licenses. Yeah. What those licenses allow in terms of how much each license allows for production, that's the limitation question we haven't gotten to yet.
Okay, because in Washington, they originally allowed license holders to have 3 30,000 square foot licenses. Overproduction in their state forced them to put two of those licenses on hold, and they capped it at 21,000 square feet.
So if you were listening on your way up, mm-hmm. You know, maybe you didn't hear that we're going to talk about the limits
on
and stuff.
Next Friday. I won't be there next Friday, but I'll send in some testimony for that.
That would be great. Appreciate that flexibility. Do you have any thoughts about what we've specifically talked about today?
Yeah, and then the other one would be on the location. So I was hoping for a little clarity regarding kind of how the parcel of property is defined. I know whatever you guys are going to set as rules, there's going to be lawyers trying to find loopholes and find ways to kind of get around this. So one of the things I was thinking of, if there's a 40-acre parcel of land subdivided, say, into 2-acre parcels, would that count as kind of one parcel where you'd have your license on that 40-acre, or would you be able to put licenses on each subdivided acre as long as it followed that setback requirement of the 20 feet, so to speak? I don't know if there's any comment there.
Yes.
So you'd be able to...
No, we have no idea.
We have no idea.
Okay.
Sounds like a great thing for rulemaking to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I just wanted a little bit of clarity that way. And then the last point would have just been with the 30,000 square... If you apply for one that's above 3,000, and then you can fall back into the smaller category, I don't know if that would necessarily kind of... push people to applying for way more than they really could justify, and then they'd be, well, we're fine with settling with 3, but we're going to go after this 30.
Sounds like another great limit conversation around our bigger topic. I apologize to off for you. But
that was all my points for today.
Any questions? Thanks. Thanks for listening in on your way up.
Thanks.
The back row comes forward. Thank you.
Long way. Hi, Jane. Good morning, Senator Cates, Representative Pierce, members of the committee. My name is Alicia Melnick. I'm an attorney at Bernstein Scherer, but I'm here today in continued representation of question one, which was passed in November and is the subject of all of your work here today and in the past months. Just a couple comments. I think the previous speaker raised a lot of the questions related to some of the earlier parts of the discussion. And I think sort of more broadly speaking, what we're talking about here, you know, what I've kind of noted on a bunch of these is why. Why do we want to limit 6 facilities per parcel of property? Why would we want to limit 300 unit blocks per parcel of property? We don't even, without even knowing the size of the parcel or any justifications for that kind of limitation, why should we separate, you know, outdoor grow sites by 20 feet, particularly when it doesn't sound like there's any kind of health or safety of the product benefits to doing that sort of separation? It seems to me that there are many other ways that you could designate separation of one grow site from another grow site without, you know, there's fences, there's, you know, there's all kinds of other ways that you could make those kind of demarcations without these sorts of limitations. So I'm not sure what justified the use of those sorts of limits in the states where they came from. But I think the point made earlier was well taken about just because another state has done this, especially when they were the first state in the nation to take this on, doesn't mean it was the best way to go. So, you know, I think as we do this again, we should just continue to reflect on what is the purpose, what is the goal that we're trying to meet by doing something like limits for a parcel of land. You know, I think, as was said, there could be some real benefits to limiting, you know, to having lots of these growers be in one area. There's often times where places zone for certain types of activities, and that sort of concentration of activity can be beneficial for oversight, for enforcement, and just for folks knowing where to go to get something. The predictability and the rationality, I think, again, as Mr. Walker said, is one of the important components of that. You discussed whether to get municipal approval potentially before looking at state approval, and I think that's something that I've been kind of chewing on a lot.
So did you hear that we're going to have a whole day devoted to conversation around that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's something that's really important and, again, may in itself limit substantially what the state is, you know, how many people the state is considering when they're determining who to give a license to. Lastly, I just want to say that after our conversation on Tuesday, feels like it was a month ago, when we were asked why would question one be supporting changes to the letter of the law, or it seems as though that there's sometimes where we support a change and sometimes where we don't support a change. And I just wanted to say I've been doing a lot of reflection on that and wanted to just present to you that the campaign itself was based for most people who supported the campaign, worked on the campaign, and I think voted for the initiative, there were some broad principles that they were supporting. And those principles were around civil liberties and decriminalization of responsible adult use and cultivation of marijuana. It was around expanded access for patients who currently continue to be unable to access marijuana through our medical program, an opportunity for people across the state of Maine to take advantage of this new legal business opportunity, the opportunity for the state to get much-needed tax revenue to support other services and goals of the state, redirection of law enforcement to true public safety issues, a safe, predictable product for consumers, and protection of the medical marijuana program or separation of the medical marijuana program. So how we get to those kind of broad goals is something that we were very clear was going to be an ongoing, evolving process and discussion. You know, we've had medical marijuana on the books since 1999, and if he were here today, I know Representative Hammond would say that they were still, you know, hard at work trying to figure out how to perfect that program, and we're far from perfecting it. The same is true if you look at our alcohol system. You know, we continually make changes to that, and I think the same is going to be true for us with this program. So as long as we kind of stay within those broad strokes, I think the question one is very supportive of figuring out the best way to get at those goals. And if that means changing a canopy cap, or if that means changing a tax rate in a way that makes sense, then we are happy to engage in those discussions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Milliken. Good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you. It's almost afternoon. I'll be brief. Senator Cates, Representative Purse, members of the committee, my name is Oakley Jones. I'm from Yarmouth, Maine. A retired businessman who's considering investment in a new emerging industry. And I just want to comment on the concept specifically of indoor co-ops. My knowledge of this business has been evolving. I think they're a bad idea with multiple licenses. And the reason I do is pretty much twofold. First, I think that you can solve for having multiple operators, if you will, by simply doing a stock-held corporation of some sort, S-Corp, C-Corp, whatever. Number two, I think within the four walls, you clearly have to have a commitment to quality control that has consistency. And therefore, I think you own what's inside those four walls on inspection. It's not to say that organically you can't have different strains grown and different activities within that four walls. You certainly can. But it has to take its own nature that way. But if you're going to make a capital investment of $500,000 or $1 million, you've got to know who's operating in that four walls, certainly, and you've got to know that they're all committed to the same cultural mission of quality control. So I've kind of changed my opinion to the chairs as I might have first approached you. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you. Any questions? Oh, Senator Gates.
Oh, I thought I was going to get out of here easy.
So I apologize to my colleagues who also want to get out of here easy, I'm sure. But could you just expand a little bit what you said, I think I understood you, the disadvantages from your perspective of having multiple licenses within, you seem from a public safety or public health, rather, and regulatory perspective?
Well, I actually see it twofold. Number one, I think you're going to have, obviously, tremendous pressure on the number of licenses you issue versus the number of people who'd like a license. So if you go into an operation and you issue three licenses, it's going to limit, I think, ultimately, the availability of licenses in a way. Relative to the quality issue, you know, if you end up with a mold or something like that that one party has got with their license, they obviously could impact everybody in that building with their licenses, so to speak, and the quality of their products. So I just think consistency and commitment to quality control within a four-wall environment would lead to a one license, now I'm talking strictly indoors, approach. I just think there's too many issues inside to want to have multiple independent operators. Let me put it that way.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
Is that?
No more questions? Great. Thank you so much. Good to see you. Hello.
My name is Peter Momoris. I'm a tax accountant in Old Orchard Beach. And I just wanted to, my son asked a bunch of questions. I just have one question. It's going to be very brief. The definition of applicant, that's where I see the largest abuse in this entire thing. A lot of my clients come in and say, how should we be setting up? Should we be setting up as LLCs, S-Corps, C-Corps? And I think the definition of applicant is going to be your biggest challenge because that's where I see the biggest abuse. That's my only comment.
Thank you. Senator Cates.
Thanks for that. Did you say your son was here?
Mm-hmm. We're a curious family.
Great. Thank you. But my question was, the general direction we were headed on applicant – I hope I don't misstate it, was if it's an individual that had to be a main resident, and if it's a business entity, whether it's a corporation or an LLC or an S-Corp or whatever the form is, that the majority of ownership and the majority of control had to be main residents. I think, an overgeneralization. But do you have other thoughts on that?
Well, because when clients come in right now, to set up as caregivers in the medical program, they have to be individuals. I can see the biggest form of abuse, say, for example, one entity being above six silo entities that are set up. And I can see, like, say, for example, a 40,000-square-foot 40,000-acre thing set up with a bunch of little six-parcel things with a corporation controlling what's underneath that. There's a number of lawyers in here that could set that up in a minute or whatever. That's where I can see the biggest abuse in this program, and that's where I see that there's cracks that are going to be open, that are going to be being dealt with, because right now it's clear in the medical program that you have to be an individual. This opens up with all the parcels and app, you know, what is going to be the definition of an applicant? Is it going to be like how much percentage can you own in a partnership before it becomes you can't be part of a, you know, another LLC or an S corp or this? This is where I'm seeing the opportunity for cracks to be open to be going through.
Well, if you have any thoughts about it, not today necessarily, but you could share with us about how we could, there are always going to be those loopholes, I guess, but how we could best set up the system, I would appreciate any thoughts you have.
I've been out of the country for the last 2 weeks, but I'm going to be showing up at all the next few meetings. So,
welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Ackley has a question for you.
Quick question for you. is your concern about the ownership of the real estate and that there would be individuals, you know, say six individuals leasing or having some sort of arrangement with the owner of the real estate, and in fact the owner would be in control?
Well,
even though,
say for example, the owner, say there's an owner of the part of the entire parcel, and each of those silos that are underneath that owner are all owned by the owner, and then there's next to that another parcel on that same. Say somebody buys 40 acres, and then they set up a bunch of six parcel things, each owned by the large corporation, and each of them is like, say, an S-corp flow-through that comes through, or an S-corp or an LLC has a flow-through that controls each of them. I don't know how it would be set up. I'm not saying exactly how it would be set up, but I can see the potential for abuse here.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Oh, so I'm just saying that I think the definition of applicant might want to be addressed.
Thank you.
Well, maybe now you're back, you can give some thought to that.
Yep. Thank you.
Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none, I want to thank everybody's flexibility around topic today. We appreciate that. We don't operate exactly how other committees operate, which pros and cons to that. So we look forward to our discussion on Tuesday of retail licenses. We'll start that discussion going and then continuing on with others. Senator DeChambeau.
Thank you. I arrived late, and I'm sorry I missed this, what for me would have been a very interesting discussion. And if I may, I just want to comment on
sure.
a couple of things. Location. We're probably going to be discussing that some more. Okay. I'll save my comments for that. But it was mentioned about the role of law enforcement. Law enforcement has stepped into this meeting a couple of times, and they walk out. I don't blame them if I was a police chief or what have you. I'm waiting for the state to make decisions. Because if they take any action right now, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And they're facing a lot of pressure from their own communities and what have you. Are we going to be extending an invitation, number one? When you're talking about location and communities, I'm thinking we were talking about buildings, and I was thinking industrial parks or what have you. I mean, there are a lot of empty, big buildings, but those industrial parks also have covenants, what they can allow in there. Zoning also. So it does have an impact on developers, not developers, but economic developers and communities and planning boards and what have you. So we got to keep that in mind. Same thing with law enforcement. I don't know how we're going to extend an invitation for, let's say, associations, the Sheriff Association, Chief of Police, or what have you, or how we communicate that. Sometimes we have an agenda, and some police chiefs might know the agenda, but we change the agenda, so they're not going to come prepared. It's going to be very difficult for one or two police chiefs to be, quote, brave enough to come in and give an opinion. Usually it's, I don't know if they're discussing it right now in their own associations. So that's a component that has, they're very secretive. Even if they've got a strategy going, they're not going to tell us. But they have to discuss it themselves, and they're waiting for something to come in, I'm sure. So I would task the chairs. I'd like to know how we're going to do that.
So with regard to the local municipality, they are coming a week from Tuesday. We've extended that invitation so we can have that conversation. And I think you brought up a great point. I think the senator and I can have a conversation about the law enforcement aspect because it does trickle into so many avenues that it might be hard to have a focused conversation, but it's certainly a very important component of it.
Yeah. And the Commissioner of Public Safety, obviously, and State Police.
Yeah, thank you. Any other final thoughts, Representative Marine?
Thank you. I'm wondering if we should be thinking about large employers or specific types of employment, like contractors that are concerned about the impact in the workplace, if we need to hear from them.
I can say we – we will be devoting a lot of time to employer-employee issues rising from legalization of, for sure. We haven't got to any of them yet, but we will, and know it's on the mind of the business community, and particularly in construction, and we'll be spending a lot of time on that.
Thank you. Representative Ackley?
Along the lines of Senator Deschambeau's thoughts on law enforcement, I wonder if we could also include Maine DEA in an invitation to testify.
Thank you. All right. Any other final thoughts for our Friday? Great. Well, everyone have a nice weekend. Motion to adjourn. So made. Second. Here we are. So,
we don't hear from you on Monday during the call. We'll know why.
And then I'll slow that by the way. So it's a better sense.